I'm trying to send him a message, but it's like it's taking a while to load even that. Oh, God. Stop talking.
You're obviously leaving all this in, right? You're not going to edit this out.
I'm keeping this in. This is amazing.
Hello, welcome to Extra Sequential episode 32. We are coming at you from various locales, three in fact, from Perth in Western Australia. And we are talking about comics, graphic novels, manga, anime and pop culture goodness with a sweet sugary coating of nerd love.
That sounds disgusting. Yeah, I'm not about to eat some anything coming from your nerd love. Anyway,
hot sugary nerd love.
It tastes
sweet.
That's
the name of my tribute band.
My name's Vladin. The voice you just heard there was Chris. And this week we're joined by occasional guest, Johnny. How you doing, Johnny?
Yay. Hello. How you going? Pretty good.
Not only occasional guest, but only guest.
That's
yes!
True.
I'm by default.
Yeah, I know, right? We need more guests. It's kind of shameful. We should work on that.
Well, we're using the magic of technology this week, so hopefully that should be able to expand the guests out a bit.
I know, right? We're well beyond the days of Hal and Wolf Johnson and the KBR Radio Hour. You know, we don't have to have people in the studio with us. We can do it online. Mm. And that's the.
And I can wear my bike shorts and you guys won't tease me for it.
We can still tease you for it, surely. Now that you told us, we'll definitely tease you for it. This week we'll be talking about how, when, and why comics became cool, chic, trendy. I'm kind of baffled by the phenomenon, and we've all got some opinions on it. It's a topic Johnny suggested, so we thought, put your money where your mouth is, Johnny, and tell us what you think as well. Mm-hmm. And that'll be coming up later in the show, but for now, let's get into our news segment.
News.
Yes.
David Slade is directing the Daredevil reboot, and has just been announced this week. So Daredevil, which you may remember, played by Ben Affleck, starring Jennifer Garner as Elektra.
I've never heard it pronounced that way.
What?
Ben Affleck.
Fleck?
Ben Affleck.
It's like just wiping a fleck off my shoulder. I actually like him. He's a good actor. He doesn't get the props he deserves. But yeah, he's directing the Daredevil reboot. It was announced. So David Slade, he has directed 30 Days of Night, which was an awesome film, and I know I recommended it to you, Maladin, and your girlfriend hated me because she ran away from the room screaming, but it's a great movie.
Yeah, rather unpleasant to watch.
And he also directed Twilight Eclipse, so I'm sure your girlfriend will like that.
Oh, maybe more. She will. What's your opinions on this reboot, Johnny?
I don't know. I'm always torn with reboots because I quite like it if they take something and completely change the context. But if it's a reboot that's not going to be, like, you know, that different.
Yeah.
Like, for example, like your Superman Earth 1.
Yeah.
That wasn't really all that different. Then you just like, it probably didn't really need to be done. It's just like, well, why is it? What's the purpose of it? So I don't know. I really like things where you do, like, you know, Superman Red Sun instead of Earth 1, but Red Sun, where it's completely different context. Yeah. But yeah, I don't know. I guess we'll have to see.
I think I get where you're coming from, because movie reboots that I've enjoyed have all been wildly separated, like the Thing remake, John Carpenter's The Thing, and that sort of, you know, difference between a 1940s sci-fi thriller and a, you know, 1980s grotesque sci-fi thriller. And but yeah, you don't get that. It's like they're blaming the actors for the film being terrible, like the Ben Affleck one. I love how you're saying Ben Affleck. It sounds like an over-the-counter pharmacy product.
Medicine.
Yeah.
Yep. We should point out that Superman Red Sun was written by, I think, Mark Miller. Came out a few years ago, where Superman was raised as a Russian. It's awesome. I think this Daredevil film could work if he's more of an urban, gritty hero, less superhero-y, and more man on the street, punishery kind of thing.
Right.
We have no idea of who's writing it, who's starring in it, or what the story is.
Basically, I think what you want in that is you want him to be a blind Batman.
Blind Batman.
I think.
Yeah. Get you. Yeah.
You know what I mean? I think if you did it that way, then I don't know. Yeah. Like, I'm not the biggest Daredevil fan in everything anyway, but I think if you keep it that sort of feel to it, then I think you could be onto a winner.
It was odd because the last film did have bits I like, and very Batman-y bits. Like, there's a bit where he beats up these gang members in a bar or something, and that could have been Batman, and then he throws a guy on some train tracks, which is less Batman-y, but that's maybe more Tim Burton's Batman. But Yeah, like that sort of thing was cool. And then they have a ridiculous playground fight scene with
Elektra
in her
Jennifer Garner.
Yeah, I don't like to say Elektra. It's just Jennifer Garner playing dress up. Okay, that's all it is. What's the general vibe among the comic book fan community about this? Are they excited? Do they have short memories?
I haven't had too many people actually mention to me yet. To be honest.
We're breaking the news.
But I give it time, and then there will always be someone to come out and go, oh, what do you think of this? And what do you think of that? Because I've had quite a bit of the new Spider-Man reboot. Lots of people have come in and had their put in their 5 cents on that. But, yeah, I haven't heard too much yet on this.
Right.
Once we know more about this reboot, expect the complaints and criticisms to float in.
Whining.
Yeah, exactly.
What other news do we have?
Supernova. Supernova, that's S-U-P-A-N-O-V-A, which I think was also a film starring somebody back in the 90s. I'm sure it was a sci-fi film. Anyway, Supernova is Australia's biggest pop culture expo, I think. I know Armageddon is another one. And it basically travels around the country. So it's in Brisbane, Melbourne, Sydney, Perth, between April and June, usually held over a weekend. You can go on supernova.com.au to see all the different guests. Simon Pegg is going to be there. We've got Nick Frost. It's going to be there as well. Nice. Katie Sackhoff from Battlestar Galactica. Stuart McKinney, Stone Wars, Clone Wars Adventures, DC Super Friends. I guess he's an artist. Barbara Eden from I Dream of Genie. Larry Hagman, also from I Dream of Genie.
Oh, wow. Marina
Baccarin from V and Firefly. And a whole bunch of different. David Finch, I think, is coming to Perth as well. And a few other comic writers and artists, of course, pop culture type people. So, I mean, the guest list seems to change almost every year because names pull out, other people replace them and stuff. So, check out supernova.com.au. But the Perth one is held in June and the other ones are held in April. So, check that out. If you're anywhere in Australia, it's definitely worth going just to. See cosplayers and wrestlers and celebrities. Greg Capullo was going. Artist Chris Claremont is going. There we go. I'm just looking at the website as we speak. So it's pretty interesting. The names are getting bigger and bigger every year, which is Christopher Lloyd is going. There you go.
What? Oh, okay. I'm definitely going. If Simon Pegg, Nick Frost, and Christopher Lloyd are there, I'm like, yeah. Okay.
Well, they might not all.
They're all East Coast, those ones.
Oh.
Yeah. And I heard that there's a very limited. Sort of group that can go see Simon Pegg and Nick Frost.
So they're not going to walk the...
There's like, you have to go into a raffle, basically, and it's the first something like 3,000 people that get there go into a raffle, and only the first 2,000 people of that who win the raffle actually get a chance to go and see them.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's quite limited if you think about the actual thing, because I think Supernova tends to have about, over the weekend, has about 15,000 people go along to it. At least the Perth one does.
Yeah, and their little, that whole section they use for the actual stage and the interviews isn't big enough, I guess, to fit everyone in there, which is a bit of a shame. And but the raffle seems like a better solution than the lining up for 5 hours thing that they normally do.
Yeah, it's still only the first, 3,000 people through the door who mention the movie that they're promoting at the moment, which is Paul.
Yep.
And prior to a certain time, and then, yeah, then you're still getting... So you pretty much, you'll still want to be in the early bunch.
Oh, okay. But
it's
talking about those two, I don't know if you guys have seen on the net the last couple of days, they did they attempted a shot-for-shot remake of Simon Pegg and Nick Frost of Star Wars while they were making Paul. The alien film, and it only goes for about 5 minutes. It's basically just them being R2-D2, C-3PO, and dodgy homemade costumes and improvising. And beep, 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 beep. It's hilarious. If you just Google Nick Frost, Simon Pegg, Star Wars, you'll find it.
He does a very convincing C-3PO, old Simon Pegg.
He does, doesn't he? Yeah, it's very amusing.
I haven't seen this yet. Oh, okay. It's like I want to pause the podcast and go watch it right now, but I'll have to wait for like an hour.
Maybe you can play it, some of the audio, during the podcast later when you edit it.
Not a bad idea.
Ben Templesmith, artist, Australian artist of 30 Days of Night, is also going to be there. Julie Benz from Dexter, Desperate Housewives. I think she was in Buffy as well, wasn't she? She's going to be there as well. Mm. So, and Kirby Crackle, who are a great nerdcore band who I actually met in Comic-Con. They have songs about superheroes. Right. They've released 2 albums. Kirby Crackle, they'll actually be here as well. So, check it out, supernova.com.au. The only other news I could think of was the new trailer has been released for Batman Arkham City, which is the sequel to Batman Arkham Asylum, which came out a couple of So this is the best Batman game ever. It's not out until October on PC, Xbox 360 and PS3, but the first official trailer, rather than a teaser, is out now with gameplay footage. It's got Two-Face in it, Joker, who looks a bit sick, and Hugo Strange, Catwoman and Riddler are all new characters in this game as well. So Batman has had a lot of bad games over the years, but if you like a Splinter Cell kind of espionage kind of games, Batman Arkham City looks absolutely huge. Basically, the inmates go out into the streets of Gotham and Batman has to restore order. So it looks pretty awesome.
Wow.
Any other news?
That's all I really had. The only other piece of information, because we mentioned it a couple of weeks ago, the Sandman TV show, again, is fluctuating between happening, not happening, and then the next day the creators will tweet, oh, no, it's definitely still happening. So yes. I almost feel bad reporting on these things because it's like in a year from now, I guess we'll know either way. But at this stage, it's kind of like I don't want to buy into everyone's hype. And some producer just sort of, talking the talk, but not walking said walk. Yes. Johnny, did you have any newsy items?
I heard news-wise?
On the grapevine in the comic store.
Has any of your customers got a new cat?
No, not really. I would be very much on top of that. I'm a big cat fan, so, you know, I haven't really said there's not been a huge amount at the moment. I mean, I guess we're still a little bit before most of the major announcements happen for this year. You know, there's a few. We're kind of in that weird time at the moment where there's not a huge amount about. There's no, huge new films being announced or anything.
It's kind of, in the US, their, summer season for films is going to be starting soonish. Yep. It started earlier this year than normal with that Battle Los Angeles thing. So they're trying to not distract the marketing for those films, I'd imagine, by announcing any new films at this stage. That's what it seems like. Mm. The only other thing that is relevant to comics is there was this. Did any of you watch the Conan teaser trailer that came out, I think, early this week or last week?
No.
It barely shows anything. It's kind of, the photos we've seen, like the stills from the film, show more than the trailer does, which is unusual. It's like these wisps of smoke, and then through the wisps of smoke, you can barely make out some footage of Jason Momoa swinging a sword and like these kind of mystical-looking foreign dudes covered in white powder. You know when like films have like foreigners, but you can't tell what kind of foreign they are? That they just have to look exotic, so they cover them in makeup, and it's like in King Kong where they go to the island, and all the tribes people, you look at them, and you're like, what are they exactly? You know what I mean? Am I crazy? Yeah.
No, you are not crazy. Also, I should point out some selfish news. If you're in Perth for the next week, the 22nd to the 26th, 28th of this month, you will be able to see a monologue by myself.
Yeah.
And there's big banners down from Quality Comics where Johnny works with my name on them because that's just awesome. Mm. And there was a monologue competition held by His Majesty's Theatre, the only operating Edwardian theatre in the Southern Hemisphere, I discovered yesterday. Nice. So, and it's a series of 8 monologues, and my one is a comedic one. And all 8 are being performed over the next week, over 5 nights, so Tuesday to Saturday. So, it's pretty good honour, I must say. I'm quite excited about it.
Yeah, super congrats on that. That's pretty much a big deal. And I read a sneak peek of the script and it's quite amusing. So I think it'll be well worth people come down and check it out. Johnny, you should go. You have no excuse. It's right across from your work.
All right, I'll do it. I'll be there for you. Front row.
All right, that's enough for news. Let's get into it.
I should put out that I'm not performing it, by the way.
Oh.
There's an actual actors are performing it.
Mm.
I'm just.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's what. I was chatting to another comic book store gent, and he seemed to be under the impression that you would be performing it, and I had to break the news.
Performing it as well. When you guys, I overheard you talking about it, and I'm like, oh, Chris putting on a play or like a monologue thing. I thought, oh, that's pretty interesting, and then. Yeah, I didn't know that was someone else's.
Probably some Whopper students. Have you been to rehearsals? Did you get to watch
them? No, I'm going to rehearsals on Saturday. I've spoken to the director, and I know that my actor looks somewhat like Matthew McConaughey.
That's an interesting choice.
A really good likeness of you then, Chris.
Yeah, absolutely. We look like brothers. I don't know if he's going to keep his shirt on or... But...
Oh, man. It's going to be very exciting for the ladies.
I'm Matthew McConaughey. Would you like to see my six-pack? That sounds like Sean Connery. Anyway.
Yeah.
Let's get into what we've been reading.
Alrighty, so what? So this week we might go into what we have been reading and viewing this week in the world of comics and pop culture and everything cool. Aladdin, what have you been checking out?
Ah, okay. This week...
Sword of Aladdin!
Alright. This week I read I picked up volume 2 of a series called The Meta Barons by Jodorowsky and Gimenez. See, I don't even know how to pronounce Jodorowsky's name or Jodorowsky. I guess it's like a Polish name. Yeah, I'm terrible at this. It looks like it's something from the heavy metal days because it's being published through Humanoids and DC Comics. Volume 1 wasn't there, so I thought, I'll take a chance on Volume 2. Basically, it's a grand sci-fi family epic story. It's got shades of Dune, Frank Herbert's Dune, and recalls the visuals of David Lynch's adaptation because he was influenced by heavy metal as well for that. And Jodorowsky's worked with Mobius before, if the name seems familiar. Basically, these two robots, kind of like C-3PO and R2-D2, except they can talk, are recounting the family history of the Meta Barons, which are kind of this family of superpowered people with white hair. And son has to kill the father in order to take on the family heirloom. That's like the tradition. And I had no idea what to expect while reading this. There's these female cult of like nuns, kind of like the Bene Gesserit from Dune. That won't mean anything to anyone unless if you've read Dune. They're trying to breed like the perfect... what's it called when you're both male and female?
Androgynous.
Physically both.
Oh, hermaphrodite.
Hermaphrodite, yeah. They're trying to breed like this perfect hermaphrodite, and the Meta Barons make him a son secretly, like without telling, so he could carry on the lineage. I know. So then, like, there's revenge taken by this evil nunhood, space traveling nunhood, who fly in this giant whale with like breathing apparatus. And, long story short, you know, he gets some. Exiled to this strange planet of these ape-like creatures, and he befriends them. And then in the next panel, he puts them all in hypersleep and sends them into space, like promising to take them to like this, this paradise world. And then they're all eaten by the whale, which is his plan to get inside himself. And like thinking this is a French comic, this may just be they're cruel, horrible bastards, and I'm meant to root for this guy, but no. The apes wake up and it's like a Trojan horse thing. So I was like, oh, God, because I was thinking I'm going to hate this guy through the whole comic. It's pretty gory, lots of nudity, what you expect in this kind of sci-fi drama. And I'm curious to see where the rest of it's going because it's been pretty, pretty wild, I would say. Monsters raping people, something Grant Morrison would enjoy for sure. That's the Meta Barons kind of painterly artwork, if you're into that as well. Have either of you seen this on the shelves, or is it just me? Because
I've seen it. Yeah,
it's
got some lovely art in it.
Yeah, that's kind of what drew me to it. And then the story's pretty crazy. A little bit, it feels like shades of like it's drawing off other stories too much, which is a bit of a drawback for me.
Bit of a letdown, yeah.
Yeah, but otherwise fairly enjoyable if you're into European sci-fi action with crazy sex and violence. So yeah,
it's really interesting because if you think about the sort of the different cultural takes on comics around the world, like you have the European ones which are quite full on, and then you have, you know, go on to see like Japanese style ones, and they can go quite full on and stuff as well. And then it seems like even like American ones and Australian ones are even like a bit more tame, and it's like much less likely that you'll see something that's kind of really, really pushing the borders on things. In terms of, this is just my opinion of American comics these days. I mean, it's not so much in the you know, your alternative publishers and things, but you know, your mainstream press, you'll find more stuff in European and Japanese things that are a bit more pushing it, if you know what I mean.
I definitely agree with you in terms of probably more so the sexual content, because even looking at a lot of mainstream American comics, the ones which are intended like T for teen have quite a lot of violence in them, and sometimes very bloody. I remember a panel where the Blob is eating a particular female superhero's like guts. I can't remember which one it was, but it was in a normal, I think it was in an Ultimate something. I don't know if that's intended for more mature readers, but I was like, whoa, that's unnecessarily graphic. I didn't need to see that. Or like Black Mask drilling a hole in using a drill on Stephanie, what's her face, the former Robin.
Yeah, spoiler, Stephanie Brown. Yeah. Who is now Batgirl.
Batgirl.
Yeah. Yeah. But, no, I get what you mean, especially about the sexual content. They have more of a range.
Very little in American comics. It's, like, very, you know, and even it's, like, I don't know if that's just, like, an American sensibility, because I remember there was a Superman comic where he was the cover art for one. I can't remember which series it was, but you might be able to remember this one, Chris. Where he was sitting there with Pa Kent, and they were kind of leaning on the fence at the farm.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, and he had a bottle of beer with him.
Yes.
And they had to, and before it went out there, they edited the beer off and they made it into like root beer,
soda pop,
or whatever it was. And I thought that's such a weird thing because, you know, I can understand what you're trying to do, but. He's like an adult. He's not a child or anything like that. And
yes, but he's worshipped by children. I think that was the same thing happened with the Batman and Robin issue a while ago. They had an upside down crucifix, which is like a symbol of the Satanist Jews. They had an upside down crucifix on the cover of Batman and Robin because there was like a part of this kind of black magic kind of storyline. And the same thing, they just erased that. After some, I don't know, maybe someone complained. But yeah, DC, well, I guess, and Marvel, because even though the characters are adults, they've got fans all over the world, and, you know, 5-year-olds wear Spider-Man and Superman on their T-shirts, so they just have to be so careful, I guess.
But do 5-year-olds even read? I mean, the most 5-year-olds, they don't read comics, they watch cartoons.
Comics.
Yeah, yeah. I think everyone's trying to hedge their bets and trying to not offend anyone. And it's like, as Johnny said, I think it's got to do, they've got more of a range of stuff. So the stuff of European comics we see ending up translated in English tends to be the more graphic adult stuff because of the costs involved. Maybe only older comic fans might appreciate it. Whereas like European comics, I'd say there's a lot more all ages comics, and I don't mean kids comics, I mean like all ages comics.
Yep.
Yeah. And there's comparatively fewer of those as well in US. It's all kind of teenage stuff, which is odd. Yeah. But
Superman Batman 61, that's what I've been reading.
What happens
that's
in
a
that?
Very sudden segue. It starts, Superman Batman, number 61, came out a couple of weeks ago, but it starts with a Shadow Pact, who's kind of like a magical version of the Justice League, I guess. So I've got Detective Chimp, who's a chimp, who's a detective.
Awesome.
And that's just awesome, because monkeys and comics go together like coffee and chocolate. You've got Blue Devil, who's a former stuntman and now a demon. You've got Enchantress and Ragman, who's like a Jewish hero made up of, who wears a soul or suits or something. Anyway, they had their own series for a couple of years written by Will Willingham, I think, did Fables.
Yeah, that's it.
Yep, he did.
Aladdin will be familiar with. So they basically haven't been around the DC universe proper for a while now. So I guess, so it's good to see them again, even though I'm not that familiar, but I do have a soft spot for, you know, chimps that can talk. So Cullen Bunn is the writer of this issue. Cullen Bunn has been getting a lot of praise for his magical Western series, The Sixth Gun, which has been published from Oni Press and has been quite a hit. So basically Shadow Pact appear in it for a Superman Batman comic. Shadow Pact, the group appear in it, probably more than Superman and Batman. But it's pretty interesting. It's got some good moments. But it basically starts with Shadow Pact fighting this guy. We don't really know why. We're just kind of thrown into this battle. And they're fighting this guy. And then they discover after they've beaten him that it's Superman under all this armor. Then we see that there's like an alternate Batman kidnaps the current day Superman and he shows him a bad future. There's always future set tales in this series. But this is actually a pretty good one with good dialogue. And it's good to see the Shadow Pact characters again. This one is called Sorcerer Kings Part 1. So if you're not that familiar with Superman Batman and you kind of miss Shadow Pact, this first issue or first part of this new series is a good way to start. And as I said, it's all about magic. So the Phantom Stranger is in it. And then we kind of see, we know that Superman hates magic because that's pretty much one of his few weaknesses. Batman doesn't understand magic, so he hates it as well. So it's a kind of a good common ground for the both of them. And it's pretty action-packed. It looks pretty awesome. So that's Superman Batman 61. The other one I've been reading is Venom number 1. Venom is one of those Marvel characters back in the 90s. Got so much attention, kind of like Thor and Captain America do these days. You might remember him, played by Topher Grace in Spider-Man 3, who could forget? So he's like the black symbiote version, the black version of Spider-Man. This is a new series called Venom 1. Venom has had his own series a few times in the past. When Marvel released this, like a relaunch of this character, we didn't know who Venom was. originally the character was a fellow kind of rival journalist, Eddie Brock, who again was played by Topher Grace in the film. This one is Flash Thompson, who was in the first Spider-Man film, and he was kind of a bully of Peter Parker, but he really likes Spider-Man. So he was an interesting character, but he's always been one of those kind of supporting cast members on the periphery of the Spider-Man world. And over the last few years, he fought in Iraq. He was a soldier in Iraq, and he lost both his legs. So this symbiote, the Venom symbiote, is basically given to him by this like military facility, I guess, and they want him to learn to control Venom so he can be a good super soldier. So this military facility gives the symbiote to Flash Thompson so he can kind of redeem his military career, and they have a kill switch just in case he gets addicted to it and goes nuts, and they want him to like take meditation classes so he can control his anger. So it's a pretty good book. It's written by the Punisher team, so that's Rick Remender, and it's the artist whose name I forget. It's pretty interesting. Jack O'Lantern, who's this weird Spider-Man villain who you don't see a lot of, he's like got a flaming pumpkin for a head. Yes, you heard me, a flaming pumpkin for a head. He's quite vicious and he's throwing like grenades at innocent civilians and stuff. It's actually pretty good. If you're not that familiar with the Marvel Universe, this is a good place to start because it's not a superhero book necessarily. It's more of a military high-tech kind of book, and Flash Thompson's a pretty interesting character. We know that he's estranged from his wife and his son and that kind of thing. So, yeah, that's Venom number one, and that's available now. Good place to start.
Are either of those comics you've had a chance to look at, or how well they're selling in the store, Johnny?
Venom's gone really well, actually. Not really that surprisingly. Venom's always been a really popular character. And it's sort of interesting as well because a lot of people that go into this don't actually know that it's a new, it's sort of like a reboot. They just go, oh, Venom, I like Venom. But I think for Venom, it's almost never been really about the person so much under the suit. It's more been about how that relates. I mean, you know, from my experience of reading Venom back in the day when I used to read it, it was all about more about Spider-Man, and it's kind of like this person was just kind of like a conduit for all Spider-Man's problems. So it's interesting to see, and I was really intrigued about this because I really like Tony Moore's art, and it's Tony Moore and Remender who are on that one.
Yep, thank you.
And just to see where they're taking from a different perspective, and I mean, it's the sort of story you can always tell like something is going to go wrong. In it. It's just set up to go wrong. But it's interesting to see from a different perspective, and I'm always like that sort of pseudo-military, experimenty sort of conspiracy sort of thing. So I think it's been quite popular so far, and I think it'd be interesting to check out. I haven't had a chance to yet, but I'm really looking forward to having a look at it.
I recommend it.
Awesome. And it was just thinking it ties in with the fact that he was bullying Peter Parker, and it kind of ties in with our topic about Geek Chic and so forth. You know, they're developing a Revenge of the Jocks movie?
Really? I just read the headline of that, but I didn't read any more. Please inform us.
It's still in early stages, and it seems like they're playing off the whole how geek is now cool, you know. I just thought it's incredibly fitting with our topic as well. There's not a whole lot of info on it. I'm hoping they don't. You know how 80s geeks aren't like actual geeks today? And whenever you
they're
see.
They're like Steve Urkel.
Yeah, and like whenever you see geeks
in movies. Can I do that?
Exactly. Like when you see geeks in movies today, they play it off that. Like they're still like, you know, suspenders and stuff. But like geeks today don't do that. They're more like Nick Frost and Simon Pegg. Those are geeks.
Us.
Yeah.
Us. So I'm hoping if it's Revenge of the Jocks, like I don't feel bad for jocks though. Do you think
that if they release that film in Australia that there'll be like jokes about underwear?
What? I'm sure there will be.
I see.
We should explain to our non-Australian listeners that jocks is a slang for underderps.
Underwear.
That's actually really funny because I remember there was a film that came out mid-90s called Robot Jocks, and I actually thought it was like a I was only little when that came out.
I thought it was a comedy
about robot jocks, and it was actually this really serious sci-fi thing where it's kind of like all the world's political problems were solved by these like this tournament between robots that would fight each other and stuff. It was just really strange and not really a kids' film in any capacity. So I don't know why they let me rent it out at the video shop.
Maybe because they thought it was about underwear, possibly. I don't
know. Yeah, I was like, robot jocks, that sounds hilarious. So.
That to me sounds more plausible than like robo teenage sportsman. I don't know, like, yeah.
Yeah, it was just really weird. It was kind of like, oh, I don't know, it was a strange film. But worth checking out for a bit of weird
apparently. Speaking of movies you've checked out, you did mention briefly a film you checked out this week.
Yeah, I went and had a look at the Adjustment Bureau this week, which was a very interesting film. I've always been sort of a fan of Matt Damon, and he's done you know, for all the whole Ben Affleck, Matt Damon, you know, combo sort of thing. I've always thought he's done some really really cool stuff, and I saw him recently in True Grit as well, and I thought he was I thought he was brilliant in that. But yeah, it was a really interesting sort of story, and it's basically it plays in, you know, Philip K. Dick is always going to be in this sort of sort of topics, but it played into the whole idea of fate and everything being out of your hands, and the and you know, for an, I think especially for an American audience, not that sort of like lack of freedom and that control, there must be a very overarching sort of thing. Because I know whenever you know, in anyone saying that, you know, government control sort of thing, people go in America go, oh, government control, and get a bit, you know, weird about it.
Yeah,
but it was really interesting in this way, because it was done in a very subtle way, and there was not too much. It wasn't really like they didn't sit you down and go, okay, here you go, kiddies, here's the basic rundown of everything. They go, right, well, this is the deal of what's happening, and this is what this group, the Adjustment Bureau, do. And they just go through and they make sure that the world stays on course, basically. That's their job, because they said that they've done it all through history, and they're kind of vaguely sort of explained in a sort of a pseudo-religious context, but not really. It's kind of like it's, you know, and I think one of my favorite parts about it was the bit that they, when they all going through it, they said that it basically, for these guys who are in the Adjustment Bureau, it's basically just a job, and there's paperwork, and there's all this, you know, they've got to do forms, and there's procedures and all this sort of stuff. And it was just a really sort of interesting way to take on this actual idea of, you know, fate, and can you challenge your fate, and all these sorts of things. So as someone who hasn't actually read the original book...
Have you read the original novel, either of you?
No, I can't. Don't think I even heard of this one. It must be one of the shorter novellas, because
it's called The Adjustment Team. I think the original, but I haven't had a chance to check it out. But I've heard one of the major differences between it, when I was doing a bit of research on the actual film, was they've got this whole sort of romance plot in it, and apparently in the film in the original novel, it actually that never really sort of existed. It was a whole bunch of other sorts of things. So it played out a bit more like a Bourne Identity sort of film, where you've kind of got like this system that was against you and you're trying to fight against it. And I think that we're trying to stay away with that, because obviously, you know, you can't have it too similar, because, you know, you've already got Matt Damon in it, and it's going to be, if you make it very similar to a Bourne Identity film, you're going to be having a Bourne Identity film, really. So I think they put this whole this romance plot in there with this girl, and think, I actually thought it worked really well, to be honest. But again, I don't know if that's because I've not read the original, and if I read the original first, I would probably go, oh my God, they've jumped on Philip K. Dick's grave and all this sort of stuff. So as a film, it was really interesting. I thought stylistically it was very well done, very well done. I thought it was quite recommended to check out. So.
I do hear that the chemistry between Matt Damon and the female lead, I can't remember her name. Emily Blunt, thank you, is like they play off each other quite well. And I do like Matt Damon as an actor as well. I think
They do very well in that, exactly. I thought that it's a believable sort of relationship, and, you know, you can understand the circumstances, and, you know, in quite a few bits you think, oh, it's going to go this way, he's going to sort it out, and then it doesn't. It goes in a completely different direction, and things change, and you're just like, oh, okay, well, how's that going? And then, you know, everything sort of, you know, wraps up and everything. But, you know, it was an interesting sort of experimentation in this sort of like notion of fate and faith and all these sorts of interesting things. But it wasn't like there was a pseudo religious undertone to it, but it wasn't like, here's religion, have religion. So, you know, it was just kind of explained, like, you know, I think at one point they go, oh, well, this is, you know, we've been described as, you know, particular religious things, but that's not really what we are. That's what we've been described as by some people.
So it's like the Stargate concept, that gods are actually
exactly. Yeah. They're actually just like aliens.
Yeah,
but some super technology gods.
Also,
but
magic
hats.
There's magic hats in this film, from what I hear.
Yeah, the hats are a control system, basically, for the thing. So the people who are in the Adjustment Bureau have a lot of power when they have these hats on. But if they don't have them on, then they're just pretty much exactly the same as people, really. So
it's like Mad Hatter, the Batman villain.
It is like that. Good call. Do you think more people would go to see it if it was called the Magic Hat?
The Magic Hat. Matt Damon and the Magic Hat.
Maybe it had dancing chipmunks and singing birds in it.
Yeah, I thought it was really cool. I'm interested to see how well it's gone. I think it probably would have done pretty well, but I don't. It's pretty much a sleeper hit, I think.
Okay.
It's not really going to be up in the same realms as, you know, your massive blockbuster films. It's not an action sort of film. It's more of a thriller and with a bit of intrigue in it. And, yeah, it was really good. I enjoyed it, so.
Cool. Unless if we had any more what we've been reading, I think it's time we got into our special topic this week.
Yep.
Thank you, Chris. Well, basically, as I came along it, and I was always like to have a bit of a think about these sort of things, as you know, because I've been collecting comics for a fair while now, and you guys have been collecting comics for a fair while now. But I remember basically when I started collecting comics, before, even before I started collecting comics, there was this always pervasive idea that collecting comics is a bit of a, you know, a terrible sort of nerdy thing, and it's not something you should really be talking about, and all this sort of stuff. And I don't know if that was one of these things that had been, you know, perpetrated by this American stereotype that, you know, we read and watch so much American stuff that it's become this thing. But it just seems to me that over the last couple of years, especially, that there's been this big shift in the idea of talking about comic books and saying that you're a fan of comic books and, you know, having a big interest in these sort of things.
I'd agree with that. I think, and probably some of our listeners can perhaps relate to that as well. I think not just comics in general, but pop culture is cool. And especially I think stuff like gaming has a lot to do with that. You know, gaming has just broken anything that Hollywood could even imagine of, you know, Call of Duty, Black Ops, Modern Warfare 2, World of Warcraft. You know, the rise of home, the rise of the internet, the rise of mobile phones, the rise of just portable and affordable technology, which used to be very geeky, you know, if you were tinkering with your motherboard in your basement or whatever. That's fine now, and I think technology is so accessible, and pop culture is just so accessible. You know, there's magazines about pop culture, and it's on. There's just so much internet and TV and film content now. There's just so much. Mm. And I think us comic geeks have ridden the crest of that to much success. I remember when I was first into comics, actually, me and my brother were just used to buy from the newsagent, and my brother was embarrassed, you know, about comics. Like, whenever his friends are around, he'd hide his comics stuff. You know, this is like the early 90s, but, you know, when you're a teenager, you're kind of worried about, you know, wearing the wrong robot jocks or whatever, so who knows.
Well, like, superhero characters are always cool among kids, but I guess, like, in the broader sense of public acceptance, like, kids always like crap. I mean, everyone knows that. But it's kind of like, yeah, it's the whole broader pop culture appeal that comics have sort of ridden the crest of that, and also not just kind of the geek chic, but also, like, people are recognizing, oh, comics are this niche thing which does produce good books. I also reckon I did a little bit of research and thinking on this topic, and I reckon I've nailed it down to one person who is responsible for making geeks cool in the general
pop. I can guess who that is.
Guess.
Alan Moore.
No. No, you're so far.
Jonathan Ross.
Oh, you're UK, so far from getting it right, eh? Okay.
UK talk show host is a big comics fan. Oprah Winfrey.
Does she feature comics on her weekly book report thing? No, The OC. Now, the character of Seth Cohen on that show, heartthrob Seth Cohen, played by Adam Brody, he, on the show, he's like an unrepentant geek, but also cool and like neurotic, but like the girls love him and stuff. And I think he, in the general sort of public, especially sort of making it more acceptable among women as well, he's kind of like, strangely enough, this character on this soap opera has made the geek stereotype much more kind of he's much more like us than the guys on Big Bang Theory. Like, he's just a little bit awkward. He's like incredibly handsome, just like us, right, guys? Yeah,
yeah, yeah, definitely.
Yeah,
let's go on with that.
But yeah,
I mean, we can't all look like Chris Matthew McConaughey, but you know. So.
Yeah, I'd be happy with Matt Damon or Ben Affleck. But
Ben Affleck,
I have two interesting facts about that story. Actually, Maladdin.
Really?
That the actor, whatever you said his name was, he was going to play Brody. The Flash in the Justice League film that never happened. And also, the writer of the OC, Alan Heinberg, is a huge comics fan.
There you go.
And he created the Young Avengers for Marvel.
It's interesting because I've I've watched a couple of episodes of the show, I'll admit. But yeah, when he starts talking comics and stuff, it's clear that whoever wrote his dialogue knows what they're talking about. It isn't just gibberish. Do you know what I mean?
I also remember a decade before that, Roseanne, sitcom Roseanne. Darlene was a comics fan who was the youngest, played by Sarah Gilbert, was that her name? Who also appears in The Big Bang Theory. And yeah, she was a big comics fan. I remember she'd like have posters in her bedroom and stuff, and her boyfriend is into comics. And I remember whenever I'd watch Roseanne and I'd see the posters, I'd go, oh, I could recognize what cover it was from the, what comic it was from the cover and stuff. So I think, you know, I guess, well, comic writers become, or comic fans become, you know, film writers and TV writers. So that influence is bound to move like a nerd virus.
Nerd virus. That's very good. Yeah, I was looking through like when this happened, and I mean it's been like a gradual thing. You can't. It's not just one event, so it's not all Seth Cohen's fault. But
I think he kicked the ball going, didn't he?
He really did. Like he's helped to change the stereotype. Except Big Bang Theory is drawing it back to like the suspender type, because those characters are like two steps away from putting on suspenders. And like, having pens in their top pocket and all that stuff, and pocket calculators and all that. But no, he's more. Yeah, it's been interesting to watch the public perception of a pop culture geek, because that's what
I think. I think we have to thank Hollywood as well. Despite, you know, the odd Catwoman or Daredevil, we've also had books like V for Vendetta and Watchmen, who you know, the public wouldn't even know. You know, the Alan Moore, who Alan Moore is, if it wasn't for films like this. I remember when X-Men came out in 2000. I remember actually an article in Wizard saying how important the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers movie was to the success of superhero films, because it was the first film that had a whole bunch of costumed characters in one film. And I was saying, and kind of
more than just one character,
to see if Mighty Morphin Power Rangers would be popular, that they'd make the first X-Men film had heaps of characters in it that nobody knew of before, even though their costumes weren't that great, but I can understand why they did that. And then you've got, you know, Hugh Jackman is a big fan of Len Wein, who created Wolverine. And we've got these actors going to Comic-Con. We know Nick Cage, Quentin Tarantino, Kevin Smith, Nick Frost, for Simon Pegg, who we mentioned before from Paul. Celebrities are comic fans as well.
Yeah.
Stuff like that helps us as well. And the press has been kind to us. You know, largely gone out the bam, wow, comics headlines, and now it's, you know, even the last couple of years, we've had local Perth writers and artists like Ben Temple-Smith, Shane McCarthy, just featuring our local newspapers and stuff in Perth, Western Australia, a town nobody's heard of. So, you know, I think that kind of stuff is good.
You touched on it really briefly. You mentioned V for Vendetta, and I was remembering that one in particular being a huge deal because I know comic fans didn't care for it, but so many people I know who didn't really had no idea what the comic was were really struck by that film. And especially the iconography of it, because interestingly enough, it has certain. He's basically a costumed anti-hero, you know, but it has all these other trappings. And I think that was one of the first moments I can think of where the general public realized, oh, there's comics that aren't about superheroes.
And I think stuff like, you're right, Ghost World and From Hell and, you know,
but like
Way to
a popular comic, do you know what I mean? Like those ones you can go, oh, that's like a niche audience and most comics aren't like that. But when they hear V for Vendetta and the Wachowski brothers and Matrix, again, is another one that sort of ushered in that era of, oh, these guys have based this film around anime and comics because, you know, Matrix draws on that is, you know.
I think anime has been important as well. You mentioned, cartoons before. Like when I was growing up, in the 80s, the cartoons were pretty much cardboard characters. Like I remember the Super Friends, you know, Superman or Green Lantern, or they all spoke the same, they all had the same personality. But the comics at that time were just so far ahead. And I think have animation has grown for not just kids anymore. We've got,
Okay. Chris, sorry. Johnny, do you want to interject your thoughts while I try and fix this?
All right, cool. The thing I think is also has made a huge difference as well is starting on that whole alternative non-superhero comic book sort of things is the really big growth in like the late 90s for this sort of suburban ghost world, you know, Daniel Klaus, Joe Matt sort of alternative sort of comic scene that has kind of propped up. And lots of people I find who come in and will never pick up a superhero comic and they were going, no, I don't really want to read any of that. But we'll read things like, you know, your Sandman and your Vertigos and all these sorts of things, and, as well as all those alternative small press sort of publications as well, which I know you're a huge fan of, Martin.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
Yeah, and I think that makes a huge difference for lots of people, because I think a lot of people find this, even still find that the superhero genre a bit alienating.
Oh, for sure.
And think, yeah.
It's one of the few times in, like, the years sort of we've both been into comics that I've sort of noticed the visibility of these indie comics has improved. So I think people are seeing that there is this other stuff. So the public perception is shifting with that. I mean, yeah, people are seeing interesting stuff that's appealing to them for like the first time in forever. So I guess finally it's sort of entering that kind of mainstream there. I'm just going to try and add Chris now. I'm telling him to talk away.
I just quickly wanted to mention that I just wanted to mention that when I was growing up in the 80s, a lot of the cartoons that were based on superheroes, they were quite bland, the characterizations, but the comics I was reading in the 80s were very rich and kind of detailed, and you could tell the characters apart. And I think the growth of animation as an art form, most, I guess, thanks to the influence of anime and the success of anime we have now in cinemas and video shops and whatnot, that never was the case. I think that's helped a lot as well. Just comics and pop culture is not even just comics, but also on, you know, but also on DVDs and all kinds of different formats, and I think that's good for our medium. So if you're a geek, don't be ashamed. Wear your badge proudly. That's all I've got to say.
Thanks, Chris.
That actually worked quite well.
Yeah, it did. And, I mean, to pick up what...
That's it. That's from me.
All right. Thanks a lot, Chris. I'm just... Whoop. But, yeah, on what Chris was saying, I definitely think he's onto something. I think, animation, along with all these other formerly niche things, have grown. So it's not just comics on their own.
Yeah, and I mean, these things are actually making, especially a lot of the new ideas are actually coming from the whole graphic novel realm, pretty much. If you think of most of the major films that's come out, even non-superhero things, there's been things like, Road to Perdition, and there's been V for Vendetta, and all these different things that have actually been adapted. And I think Hollywood's finally going, oh, actually, there's a bit of talent here, and there's a bit of interesting creative story, story writing and all that sort of stuff. So it's actually becoming a bit more thing. And then people are seeing this and go, oh, you know, they look up the Wikipedia page and go, oh, I didn't know this was based on a graphic novel, and they want to go find out what it's all about. And then that's usually like the gateway into this world. And these people who are previously had no experience with these things are now actually brought in through this broader reach. So it's kind of like a self-fulfilling prophecy, really, because, you know, the more that these things get picked up, then the more people are accepting them, and then the more people accept them, the more they get picked up, and it all keeps going around in a big cool circle, which is always really good.
I agree with you there, definitely. I think a lot of this has happened in spite of how the comic industry is, like the mainstream comic industry is being run. It seems like they're almost actively working against trying to, like they say they want to get new readers, but the way their business model is set up now is basically to milk the current readers for all they're worth, keep rebooting things, like keep saying, oh, this is, keep trying to make these essential things rather than just putting out good books. And it's scaring away new readers to the mainstream press. And a lot of this, the rise in interest is, as you said, independent comics are driving it, movies are driving it, and it's happening, yeah. I don't know if you agree, but I think it's happening in spite of the comic industry, which is quite surprising. You'd think they'd
I don't know if, like, I've noticed this the last couple of years. I've been through quite a few different big crossovers between the different things, you know, and your comic book crossover is when they get all the titles in a thing and just cross them all over and put every character in to make this sort of broad appeal, to make this one story. And they can be done really interestingly. Like, for example, you know, your Marvel Civil War was probably the one that I've last read, and that's a good 5 years old now.
Yeah.
You know, but then they bring out new ones and they're just like, they don't actually have the same appeal is something, because I mean, Civil War's whole point was it was asking a big question about, and sort of like a good philosophical question about the nature of superheroes.
And it's not the first time that Marvel's asked that question before, specifically like mutant registration and kind of they've addressed similar things in X-Men specifically on that. But you're right about Civil War. Like, that's the first time, one of few times I've had people who don't read comics ask me, what's this thing I've been hearing about Civil War? I don't even know how it happened. I mean, Was it covered in the mainstream press, or are people just
hearing
it?
There was a little bit of it. I remember hearing a little bits and pieces about this whole thing about, but I don't think, I don't know, it just seems to have picked up on its own. And but then after that, they just went back to the same thing, and it was just, you know, the way I like to think about it is you put it in sort of like a, you know, a gaming context, and they always just do these big things, and everyone gets together to fight this, the next boss, and then they pass the boss, and they go to the next level, you know, and then it just resets, and it's just another boss at the end of the level. So it's just like there isn't the same sort of level of these in the mainstream press as there is in you're finding in your independence, where they just pick up a story and they just go, you know, it may be something very simple, like, you know, your Dan Klaus thing, which is about, you know, suburban life and all those sorts of things. And then, you know, Joe Matt's very similar, and, you know, and even things like Scott Pilgrim as well, which is kind of like, you know, that's a celebration of geek culture pretty much. And that went crazy because people picked it up and they thought, oh, this is amazing. This is everything I grew up with as a child, and this is all the things I remember. It's talking about, you know, Sonic video games I used to play and all these bits and pieces. And I think that something like Scott Pilgrim can do so well is sort of very indicative of the way that things are moving now, that how you know, pop culture has actually become this thing that isn't, you know, pop culture isn't a dirty word anymore.
Yeah.
It's not something to be ashamed of. So,
and I think it's also more and more, and Scott Pilgrim's a good example of this. I've noticed the ones which have sort of been become cool are the ones which weren't actual, like, comics, like in the pamphlet format. They came out, like, in the, like, in a digest form or in a graphic novel form. I think, like, as the medium itself is there, but it's kind of like almost as if comics themselves aren't cool. It's kind of the new graphic novel thing, which is the cool word. I mean, if you look at a film that's coming out, they won't say based on the hit comic book, they'll say based on the hit series of graphic novels.
Exactly. That's, I think that makes a big difference as well. And there's also always a bit of a cost barrier to new readers coming in and looking at, because if you come in and have a look at the actual cost of these individual issues, they're quite expensive for something that's really only going to be about 20 pages long. It's quite a thin comic. I remember back in the day, they used to be a lot thicker than they are now, and they've just not nearly the same thing. But you're still paying about, you know, anywhere between $5 to $8 on a comic. It'll last you about 5 minutes, 10 minutes, if that. And you're thinking that's quite expensive for what it is.
And it's full of ads, which scares off a lot of people. And
mostly it's full of ads as well. And I think it's, there might be a similar sort of trend in the comic industry, how the music industry is moving, where people are going away from the whole comic, the original distribution methods, you know, like your CDs and that, are moving to an online sort of distribution. And a really good example of this is the Freak Angel series, which is being written by Warren Ellis. And that's all published online as a webcomic to be read for free and published as an actual group of graphic novels, and was never issued as actual single issue comics. But that's still very popular for what it is, and people come and they buy them. And webcomics are huge as well. People want this little small dose, and they'll buy it and they can read it wherever they are, especially with, you know, iPhones and all different internet enabled devices and stuff, and they buy these things. And it becomes part of their everyday life to read it like that. But if you have to go and buy it from a shop and get the issues, and then there's that cost barrier and all that sort of stuff, it kind of is pushing people away. And I think they're still living in this kind of, the main Marvel DC are kind of living in this weird old-fashioned world where they still think everything that happened in the 90s is still very, very current. So it's interesting to see. I just think how the graphic novel has definitely taken over as a thing, and people want contained stories rather than an actual subscription based, you know. It's not like back in the day when you'd go down to the shops and you'd have $2 and you go buy an actual comic, you know, your Phantom comic or something like that. And there's not so much of that anymore. It's more people want a small, you know, dose at a time and then go into it. So,
and on that same thing, I mean, novels went the same way. You look at Charles Dickens, all of his novels originally came out in periodicals, in magazines. They weren't published as books. He was basically putting out... Oh, hello, Chris.
Oh, hello.
Oh, you've managed to join us. And let's hope it lasts. Yeah, but I'll just finish my thought and then we can continue. Because, like, Charles Dickens was able to put out individual issues, and then finally that model just collapsed. And I'm sure there were people then, as there are now, saying, you know, the current form, you know, of floppy comics will never die, which is basically the thoughts of Marvel and DC and how they're running their business, when clearly things are moving towards, as you said, online or just book form. And it's almost not exactly the same as novels, but it's you see, and with music, the format that people are preferring is changing, and it's this dying form, which is still loved by kind of the diehards, which is kind of just a throwback to maybe an older way of thinking, which is maybe less cool. I don't know if Chris would agree with that, if he's still there.
Yeah, I am. What's cool?
Comics as an actual single issues, and you know, as an idea, has kind of gone a bit out of fashion. People are moving more towards picking up trades and graphic novels of contained stories.
I think the term graphic novel is obviously a lot more acceptable, and obviously in bookstores, bookshelves.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, obviously that's a more relatable format, and I think people will more likely read a graphic novel or a trade paperback on the train or the bus rather than like a single floppy. But I always read my floppies on the train.
Yeah. But, in terms of, like, I guess where most people, like, it'll be interesting to see where it goes. But I'm going to call it now. I'd put money on it that the kind of current form of comics will stay alive in some form, but it'll mostly shift towards original graphic novels at some point once Marvel and DC cotton on to what's going on. I think superhero comics will probably always stay in the floppy form, though. I think that format works for them.
I think us geeks, there's no more powerful and stronger group of geeks than superhero comics readers, and I think they demand kind of regular publishing schedule. They can't wait, month or 2 months for trades to come out.
Mm.
They want to complain about something every week.
Yeah, that'll just stay, I reckon. Yeah, that'll just stay as a niche. Because it's been interesting. I don't know what Johnny's experience is because you know better than I would because you work in a comic book retail environment. But from what I understand of the numbers of how things are selling, there's like a core market of under a million, really, people who regularly buy comic book issues. Comic book issues, not comic books altogether, and that group is sort of being the one marketed towards DC and by DC and Marvel. Whereas as Johnny mentioned, and you weren't here for, like, the indies are the ones that are appealing to the broader demographic. I don't know if you agree, Chris.
I mean, the numbers, I think in the 90s they were, yeah, you're right, selling in the millions. Whereas now it's like, a couple hundred thousand.
Mm.
That's unfortunate, but I think there's just so much more voices now, so that's only natural. But I think it's a death knell for the industry.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. What do you think on that, Johnny? Do you think, like, where are things going to go? I mean,
Look, I don't know, because I mean, like, it's one of those things that you think potentially maybe back in the day your actual single issue comics could come back, like vinyls come back. I don't think anyone could have predicted that was going to really happen. It was just kind of started off as a niche. People were sticking onto the traditionalists in the same way, and then they might come back as a thing. I mean, these sort of things are very cyclical. But I think, just for your Joe blogs, when they see a book and they go, oh, look, $25 for one contained story. This is about the particular thing. I might come in and I want to read a story about Green Lantern. I want to pick up one book about that. And you pick that up, and that's a sort of an acceptable sort of thing. But I think maybe there might be quite a – and Marvel did try to do it at one point with the Spider-Girl issues. They were publishing them all online. And we're going to collect them in trades. And I think there's going to be more of a move to that and I think this is, again, a similar parallel can be drawn with Freak the music Angels. Industry.
Yeah.
So I think you've just, if they've got people, getting the actual major content first for free or very cheaply, like you have set a subscription to the actual service and then accessing and then being able to buy them in formats that you can, say, give to your friends or read later and all that sort of thing. I think that's the way it's probably going to move.
Mm.
So,
and now that comics are available on your iPad and your iPhone and all this stuff, and it's taken far too long to get there, it should have been available in that format a long time ago. Online readable, buying comics online, when they come out. It's appealing to how people are consuming media these days, which is
But I think there's also an interesting thing about that, because I've had a look into the actual buying of digital copies, and there isn't a huge difference in price between actually buying a physical copy and a digital copy at
the moment. That's where they're hurting themselves, I reckon, yeah.
Mm. Mm. You need to do, again, like with, I remember when originally they were selling MP3s, and they were, you know, very bad quality MP3s, but they were about the sort of the $3, $4, $5 mark for individual songs and stuff, and you'd buy albums and they'd be, you know, $25, and then that was that big drag down of the actual prices. So, you know, it actually made that, you know, if you want to get everything else, you go out and you buy the CD, but if you just want to get the song because you liked it, you'd buy the individual song on its own. And I think that's what's going to happen with issues as well. You'll just go, say, buy a dollar for an issue or 50 cents for an issue on thing, or it'll be part of your subscription package, say pay $100 a year and have access to a certain number of issues, and if you want more then you go for the next subscription package or something like that. I think that's the way that it's probably going to head for the Marvel and DC.
That's interesting, because Chris and I were talking about this very topic last week, and how, and same with music, the most of the cost is in distribution and printing. Once that's cut out, there is literally no excuse for selling an MP3 for anything more than, you know, $2 a single song, you know what I mean? Even that steep, like 99 cents is the standard, and hopefully comics will get, well, they're getting close to that now.
Well, that's the thing about digital. It's not making a copy is not a destructive process. You can make as many copies as you want, and it's not going to cost you any more, really. Just a bit of power to actually make the copies. But even then, your distribution system is digital and is nowhere the same as having to actually physically ship comics and, you know, print them up and all that sort of stuff. And
I'm glad Chris could rejoin us, because for just the last leg of this conversation, we've talked about how and why and sort of what formats kind of comics have become trendy, I guess. I want to talk about maybe how we feel about it, and maybe not so much us, but how the kind of diehard geeks who've been following comics for decades, which I guess admittedly isn't us, how they feel about now that this formerly niche thing has suddenly become this cool thing that people who, it's almost like that indie mindset that people tease, you know, like, oh, I was into comics before you guys even heard of them. I've encountered that. I don't know if you guys have, Chris.
I love it. I'm quite happy for anyone to read comics. I've never been, you know, any inclusive or exclusive. I think more people that read comics, the better. I'm always giving comics to people as Christmas presents and birthday presents and all manner of things. I mean, I can understand how some kind of, there might be some arty cultured snobs who think, no, I was reading that Superman way before you were.
Would you call that cultured?
Well, no. They think they're cultured. Stan Lee said every comic is somebody's first comic. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, we can be integral to that process.
But specifically now that they're cool, and like before, maybe people who kind of wore the uncoolness as a badge of honor. Does that make sense? It's kind of like people who follow a sports team when they're doing really badly are the ones who are really annoyed when people kind of start following that sports team once they're doing well. And that's probably the closest analogy I can think of.
Yeah, I get you. And I guess there are people like that, but I don't know any, and I wouldn't consider myself one. The more the merrier.
Johnny?
I think there is a little bit of that, I think most people who are actually into comics and really love comics for the medium are pretty keen to actually get other people to read and stuff like that. And even like, I've been slowly converting my friends to these sort of things and saying, okay, well, maybe you're probably not going to want to read this particular thing, but have a look at this or have a look at this. And I just think it's always good to have more people to talk about these sort of things. If you could talk about this sort of stuff in a general context, you don't have to wait till you catch up with your one mate who reads comics, then that's a really good thing. And that's just my personal opinion on it. But
yeah, I think it's kind of exciting, and it's kind of nice to have a day in the sun. And like anything, I'm sure there'll become a period where they'll become uncool again. I mean, movies go through that same sort of certain types of films, I guess, go through that same cycle as well. But in the store, have you? I would imagine you would have certain people who might look down on other people coming into the store, if that makes sense. An example I can think of is I've heard certain types of comic book fans complain about kids who are into manga.
I have heard that as well, actually, to be honest. They think that as a manga, but people only see manga and that's it. But I mean, manga is a very sort of, there is parallels between that and Western comics, but I can understand why people would really only read manga in isolation, because it is its own little world, really, in these sort of things. So I don't know why. It's kind of a bit of a jealous attitude, I think, that these people have, and I think they're just like, well, oh, you know, they're only into this particular thing, and you know, they're not, you know, they didn't listen to my advice and that sort of thing. But yeah, I can definitely, bringing up the point of manga is definitely true. I've have heard that before. I don't know. It's kind of, I think it's counterintuitive to discourage people from reading comics when after all these years you've been trying to get people to read them and now they're finally reading them. You can't be like, well, they didn't read them on my terms, so I don't want them to read them anymore. You know, it's, you're kind of shooting yourself in the foot, really. Yeah. Take your victories where you can. So,
I guess some people like to feel like they're the outsider, and once what they're into becomes cool, like punk fans, that's another obvious example. You know, like from the 70s and then into the 80s, going, well, that's not punk. What is that? And then suddenly they're no longer niche and they have to find a new niche. And frankly, I'm fine if they don't want to read comics anymore because they're cool.
Yeah, too cool for it? That's fine. There's plenty of other cool
things
you
guys
can do. Yeah. So.
Yeah, more money for us to spend.
I think that wraps us up pretty well.
Yeah, I think so. Okay, that was a decidedly very buggy episode of Extra Sequential for middle week of March 2011. It's been good having Johnny on the show with us. We'd like to get you on more
Thanks,
often.
Johnny, we love you. That's my thoughts.
He really does. He's trying to get that in case he gets cut off. Would you be pleased to join us again sometime? Or
certainly. I'm always happy to. So
very, very good. Hopefully one of many guests in the future. Excellent. You can contact Chris at, what is it, Chris?
Chris at extrasequential.com, and that's Chris with a K.
Yeah, you can go to the Extra Sequential website, www.extrasequential.com. We have a Facebook site now. Just look for Extra Sequential there on Facebook. Definitely friend us and suggest topics for the show, which is what Johnny did. And music for the show is at purgeaudit.com. And if you feel like it, you can pop into Quality Comics, which is where Johnny works.
Come say hello.
All right, folks. Thanks for listening to us for another week, and you'll catch us next week.
Bye bye from us three geeks.
See you later.
Yeah, there he goes.
Looks like he's gone.
Well, we can carry on.
Hello.
Oh, he's back.
Can you hear us, Chris?
Hello.
Okay,
hello.
Well, we can carry on until Chris is back in the conversation.
Yo.
Okay, I'll just tell him to...
Word up, Chris Vader.
Yo. Hello.
I'm keeping this in. This is amazing. Okay, I'm just going to send him a message.
Yo.
I can't shut him out of this.
Hello, Milan.
Yes, Chris. You got us?
No. Hello, Maladdin.
Oh, boy.
Hello, I cannot hear you. Hello.
Yeah.
I'm Chris. I'm deaf, but I talk well.
God, some of these are the perfect promos, aren't they? This was a radio show.
Hello, can you...
Okay.